Hey, this is Stu from Love Language, and you're listening to Juicebox Podcast. And you also might be listening to Juicebox by me, because that's the name of one of my songs, too.
Listen to that song, too.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm Hunter McClamrock, and today we have an interview with Stu McClam, the mastermind behind The Love Language. We talked about their latest record, Baby Grand, a couple months ago when it came out. Nick and I both just really love that record. I think it's the best one that he's put out so far, and I was really happy to get to talk to him. We're from the same hometown, Raleigh, North Carolina, but both now live in Los Angeles. He moved out here a little over a year ago, and it's kind of informed some of his songwriting, and I wanted to ask what it was like to move to the other side of the country from where your band is, and you know, what's next for him. We recorded this a couple weeks ago, but I wanted to hold on to it until after it was announced that The Love Language would be joining one of my absolute favorite bands of all time, Teenage Fan Club, on a U.S. tour early next year. So get your tickets for that. That's going to be incredible, and I really hope everyone enjoys my interview with Stu. Hey guys, welcome to a very special edition of Juicebox Music Podcast. I've got a special guest today in studio. We got Stu McClam from The Love Language. How you doing, Stu?
What up? What up? I'm doing good.
It's really good to have you here. You know, we talked about your new album last month on the show. It's been out for almost 2 months now.
Right? Yeah.
2 months this week. Record's called Baby Grand. Your first album in a long time. How does it feel now that you've been anticipating this release for so long? How does it feel to finally have it out there? And it's been out there for a little while, you know, for a couple months, settling in.
Yeah, I'd say it feels, in general, it feels great. It's been great to get it out there. In a lot of ways, it wasn't quite as long as a wait as you may think from not being, seeing the whole process. Yeah. It was 5 years between albums. But I actually wasn't just weirdly tinkering or obsessing over something.
You weren't Brian Wilson totally carpeted room with pillows on the wall and everything.
Yeah, I guess I was always writing and demoing stuff, and but it was actually considering how long it took between records, it was kind of made rather quickly, as far as finding the songs I wanted to do and piecing them together and then going into the studio. So in that regard, it's felt a lot more it's not something I've been sitling on forever. Like the record before, that's another story. That one, yeah, I can take a long time between sometimes, but you know, it's how it goes. But yeah, it feels great. We did a tour. It was a real warm welcome we had. We did pretty much up and down the East Coast.
Yeah.
It was great. And then we got some more stuff planned. We got one LA show.
You're playing LA in a couple weeks, right? October 19th?
Yeah, Friday, October 19th. And then we're planning a West Coast tour probably January-ish.
Oh,
but
cool.
We haven't really totally rounded out all the dates.
You don't have to worry about snow.
I know, right?
Highway, you do on the East Coast for the winter tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you were just back home, right? Stu and I are both from Triangle of North Carolina. I know. You claim Raleigh, right? You get specific with Cary or other places.
Yeah, I say Raleigh mostly because it's the most recognizable. In a lot of ways, we're the band members that I'm playing with now, Tom Simpson, Eddie Sanchez, Autumn Inger. They all are in Chapel Hill, Durham.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I don't really know where home is, but
You were in Raleigh, right? And mm-hmm. for the Hopscotch Festival mm-hmm. this year, how was that?
It was awesome. We played the first night, Thursday night, and we played late. It was 12:30, so as you imagine, it was the first night of a music festival and playing kind of late. So the crowd was rowdy. Yeah, nice. It was towards the last song for a typical set. You want to save the bangers or whatever for the end, and they were visibly a mosh pit, breaking out. It was kind of intense. I didn't you know, Ian Micaiah and be like, we're not playing unless you stop. But I thought about it. It was getting really.
Yeah. Oh, damn. And there was the, you guys were in the same bill as U.S. Girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love their new album is so good.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard they're great live.
It was crazy live. Yeah, like free jazz, freak outs. Just like, I don't know. Their set just was like so many different types of influences and stuff. It was amazing.
So you're at a festival, first night of a festival, playing really late. First show at home in a while. Brand new album. You got a great band with like one of the albums of the year opening for you that night. So that must have been a pretty great show.
Yeah, yeah. It was totally wild. It was at Lincoln Theater, which is it's one of my favorite venues in Raleigh. It's a really, I think it was like it used to be a jazz club in like the, like maybe like the 40s or something.
Oh, really?
Someone told me that. Yeah, it was like a big jazz club, but it's a beautiful theater.
That's great. And how was, did you catch anybody else at the festival?
Yeah, I did. I call it sleep. actually, like the band, every time you say that.
I call it a little wink guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sleep was crazy. You know, they're pretty like legendary, sort of like, I don't know, like stoner metal band.
Mm-hmm.
But,
they take a long time between albums too.
Yes,
in like 20 years.
Yeah, we have that in common. But it was wild.
Makes you feel good in perspective.
Yeah, it's a 3-piece, and the bassist, the guitarist, they had something like 14 amps each. It was so excessive and crazy. But
seems like it would be hard to tour.
And our sound guy Rob Walsh is a huge fan of Sleep, and so we watched it right before our set, and he was like, you hear how loud their kick drum is? He's like, that's how loud yours is going to be in a few hours. I was like, rock, we're indie rock, remember? He's like, it's going to be awesome.
And it was,
but
right?
It was, yeah. I heard that we were mixed really loud, which is great.
That's really cool. Yeah. Well, any other highlights like from the tour besides the homecoming show?
Yeah. We played a great venue in New York, Baby's All Right. That was sort of a highlight. That was really good energy that night. DC was great. We did a run of shows with Batfangs, which is Laura King. She's sort of a Chapel Hill Carborough legend. She plays with Tom, our drummer, in another project called Speed Stick, which is just two drummers facing each other.
That's awesome.
It's obviously it's more like a live thing, but it's really, really awesome. But it's her and Betsy Wright, and they're in Batfangs. But we did 3 shows with them, Philly, DC, and New York. But those really stuck out. Those were some great nights. We did we played Comet Ping Pong. Is that ring a bell?
In DC? Is that Pizzagate?
It was where Pizzagate was.
Wow.
I can confirm that I did not find any, you know.
You found nothing sinister in the background.
Or, anything.
Well, I think you're probably ruined for good on alt-right media after daring to step foot inside that place.
You know, we were suspicious. We were like creeping around, looking behind doors, but nothing. Everything looked fine. But that was like a crazy fun night too. That was probably like the rowdiest show. I don't know, DC. I don't necessarily think of that city as like rowdy, but it was like beer soaked and people yelling and just, I don't know, it was crazy.
I heard it can be a pretty big drinking city because people are so pent up there and like have to like behave a certain way all the time. It's like Hollywood, but it's politics.
Yeah,
it's a weird scene.
It reminded me of like our old shows in Wilmington at the Soapbox where we'd finish and there would just be like beer strung. People were like throwing beers at us, I guess out of love. I don't know, but it was kind of. The stage was like that, but it was super fun.
So this is your fourth album as Love Language now, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the third one on Merge.
Mm-hmm.
So Merge Records, like, what can you say about Merge Records if you come from, especially coming from where we're from in North Carolina, it's like the holy grail of indie rock. Definitely like one of the best indie labels in the world ever of all time, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to be on that roster and getting working with them? I don't know those guys from Superchunk who started the label, but you must at this point. And like,
yeah.
What is that whole relationship like?
With Mac and Laura? Yeah. I remember like when I first got signed, it was, you know, it was
equal parts like blew my mind. It was like a dream coming true. I really had my sights on that label when I was first started writing stuff for Love Language, and it was like,
yeah.
I mailed them like demos, little CDRs, and I sent them like roses one time or something. And and it took a little while to get it, get noticed or whatever. But yeah, it was like a total like dream come true when I got signed. It was also like almost a little intimidating. I was like, oh my god, like I'm on the same label as Destroyer or like, you know, all these legendary bands.
Yeah.
But once you kind of get into the family and meet them, they're really run in a lot of ways like a small label, like in a good way. Like they have mm-hmm. a far reach, and they're, you know, very business savvy mm-hmm. In a good way. But, you know, you go into the office and it's, you know, maybe like 10 people in there, tops, and it feels quaint in a nice way too, where it's like, you know, I know everyone's name there, they all know me, you mm-hmm. know? It's not like there's nothing like corporate or as yeah. big as they've gotten and successful as they've gotten, there's no feel of that. So that's been really cool. I feel like they just always had a ethos of like, I don't know, just signing artists they trust and believe in and kind of letting them do what mm-hmm. they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, they've had, you know, a lot of bands and artists releasing multiple albums on them like through huge long periods of time and being really yeah. loyal to artists and vice yeah. versa mm-hmm. you know, like artists that have gotten really big who have stuck around there. It just seems like a good place to be.
Yeah totally. A lot of people ask that, they're like, you still emerge?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's there, you know. I think it is, a music is a cutthroat industry, and I've heard stories from people that, yeah, like our first album did this and then the mm-hmm. second one did this mm-hmm. and we got dropped or something. And I don't know, like, I don't want to tell any, like, gossip. I shouldn't. There's like, one band I heard about that, like, had a drop, but I can't say who it is, but it's a bigger band. It's that they were successful, they just mm-hmm. had a problem, and then they ended up working together later. But
yeah, yeah.
But anyways, what I'm getting at is, yeah, Merge never really, like, drops anyone. I think they try to keep investing.
What happened with Let's Wrestle? I don't think their third album came out on Merge. Maybe they
Did they do one? I was actually thinking about it the other day because I loved.
Maybe only that second one actually came out on Merge, because they had three, and I don't think.
I feel like Wesley did. He did that. Oh, you played that for me. His like solo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's got. So the band broke up. They did one. They did a third album. Before, and that's a British band signed on Merge. It was mm-hmm. kind of like a little more unusual, like kind of out of left field for them. But did you guys play shows with them?
We did.
I know you did a split 7-inch.
Yeah, we did, like, man, this was years ago. But I think it was around like 2010.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we did a few shows with them. Maybe just like two, maybe three. I want to say we played in New York or something. And I'm like, that was a long time ago.
That was one of my favorite bands kind of that era. I don't know. Especially that first album, the
yeah,
one before the one that was out on
Tanks.
Merge.
I still play
yeah,
it on
so
tons
good.
Of like mixed CDT.
The lyrics are so like, they're just so funny.
Yeah.
So still on Merge now. Why not? Like, why would you? Like,
yeah.
Especially now, even big bands, like you see Interpol on Matador, leaving Matador to go to Capitol and coming back to Matador.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like, it's a better
yeah.
place to be in,
yeah.
in today's ecosystem, is my guess.
Totally.
Not
I mean,
running around with a lot of debt from major label costs and things like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, at least in the world of, like, indie rock, I think you just gotta, like, I don't know. Yes, it is, like, a business in a lot of ways, and that's a huge part of it. As far as, like, making the records, people respond to just sincere, like, honest stuff, I feel like. So, you don't need to overthink it.
My dog is really responding to
yeah.
you right now, I
yeah.
think. So if you guys hear any sounds in the background, my dog is really taking a liking to Stu here.
I need more dogs in my life.
Dogs.
I'd have one if I wasn't touring.
Yeah, and it's got to be hard. I mean,
yeah.
how many musicians do you know that have dogs? They have to have somebody that
yeah.
they can leave them with
yeah.
for long periods of time. Do you like being on the road in general? Like, does that feel like a natural place for you? Or
I really do. Yeah, this, you know, I'm about to be 38 in like 2 weeks, which is crazy. I mean, that's
the new
seems, I know, but
18.
But I did wonder when this came out, like, am I going to have the stamina to tour? And I did, and I think I'd love to do it as long as I can.
Any more aches and pains when you wake up now? Are you feeling sprightly?
We make sure we book beds. We're not crashing on floors and couches.
It makes a big difference, I'm sure.
Yeah, but no, I genuinely love touring, and I want to do a lot more. If you want to book some shows, holler at me.
Yeah,
anyone out there listening?
Yeah, get on and get some shows. I mean, this is from almost like everybody that I've talked to who's heard the new record is like really, really into it, and people that like I know from a long time ago who've known you guys for forever, and then new people that I've turned on to it or I've talked to about it. So I think you got to like a lot of, to get out there. You got to get them some festivals. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that would be good to get some other people seeing you. You're a great band for that.
Yeah. No, I think we're trying to, like, really hit it hard. We've got a lot of stuff in the works for next year, but touring this, we're actually doing a reissue of the first record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it'll cool. happen in the summer.
That's awesome.
With some, like, extra, like, material and stuff that was on there. Maybe some live stuff and, like, at least one or two kind of things I recorded on then, mm-hmm. like, songs. That lo-fi, like, sound and stuff, but...
Well, some of people that may not know you so much, like, quickly, like, how did this project start? Because you were in a band, I remember.
Capulets?
Yeah. And I think I must have seen you guys, like, I know I was kind of, early on, I was in college in New York, so I was coming back and visiting friends and visiting family and everything and seeing bands all the time, like, at Kings and different places.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I saw you guys at some point back then, but... How did that, like, turn into the Love Language? That was not, you know, Love Language is basically you,
mm-hmm.
your project. That one was more of a band, like,
yeah, it was like
band thing, right?
I guess I've always loved music, and I don't know, it took me a little while to gain the confidence to, like, actually pursue it or, like, write songs. So I was always, like, you know, listening to music and enjoying it, but I would write sort of like joke songs like throughout high school. I don't know. I didn't really take them serious or like
mm-hmm.
I wasn't like really aspiring to be a songwriter. And it wasn't until the Capulets, which I just joined that band as a guitar player,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, like starting out that I realized like, oh, I really enjoy writing songs and some people seem to enjoy it too. So it was like, that was cool. So I did that for a while. And then, you know, I guess like a lot of bands, we just had like some differences of direction we wanted to go and stuff. And we broke up. And then I don't know, like I had some songs I was writing, but rather than wanting to put a band together per se, I was just sort of like, you know, well, I'll borrow this drum set from my buddy. I bought some gear, but then I just kind of started like doing the multi-track
mm-hmm.
thing. And so that's kind of how I got started with like the first record. And, you know, it's not like complicated drum parts or anything back then, so I could handle it all.
So you played every instrument on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except our good mutual friend, Chris
Hutcherson?
Chris Hutcherson.
Yeah.
Played drums on one song, Nocturne.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
I think I knew that. That's cool. So so that album kind of, did you have expectations for that when you made that, or is it something you were just kind of fooling around with and then you felt really good about it and wanted to...
Yeah, it was more like
other people to
hear felt really good about it. I don't know what my expectations were, but I did feel really good about it. I knew that it was like, you know, very... I knew it was... I guess I almost thought of them as demos for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into a studio to try to re-record one, and I realized, oh, like, the vibe is totally in these sort of, like, these demos, these versions. Like, I tried to re-record Lolita, and I just had, like, no energy to it. And so that
cool,
sort of
yeah.
comes, I was like, okay, well, I'm making a record now. So I kind of, like, did it once, you know, one step at a time. There was a really cool thing about that. I always feel like I almost want to give... bands like starting this advice. Now this was like 10 years ago when I did it. Things have changed, but I feel like a lot of like on a local level, like people responding to it was, I would just basically like drop a new song. This is MySpace. But drop a new song every like month or 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that made it exciting because people were like, oh, here's this band like no one knows about. And mm-hmm. I really love this song. Oh, they've got a new song. And each song would be like, get a little more attention. Yeah. I feel like then if I were to just drop something on like Bandcamp or...
Yeah, a whole project.
You know, so I feel like there's something cool about if you're getting a project started and you're like, oh, I've got to get like a record done and then book shows. I think people respond to just artists creating stuff. So I feel like if you're like, write a song, drop it, put it on Bandcamp, drop another one. You know, I don't know. That's, I feel like it's easy to build like a fan base that way mm-hmm. when you, rather, because we have this endless faucet, but I feel like one thing at a time helps you to like.
Does it feel like bands you know what I mean? Now? Like, yeah, like I feel like what you're saying, like bands now.
It's a chore sometimes. Someone's like, hey, check out my record. And I hate that it is.
Right.
But it's like, all right, I got to make time.
Like, have you played any shows before you even put out that record? Like, it used to be bands would play years of shows before they even make a record. And now it's like vice versa.
Yeah. No, I mean, let's see. That it was just such a, like, organic thing. I was like, I think I'd had, like, four songs. I mean, I'm trying to think. The first shows was with Chris. It was just me and him. That was, like, that was Love Language, like, 1.0. Now we're, like... 9.0 or something, but but it was I guess I had gotten at least like 5 or 6 together to do a set, but mm-hmm. but I mean that was probably I was at about a one song a month pace, maybe a little longer, so it was probably like building up people interested in the project for like 8 months before we played a show.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a saturated market, you know.
It now it's like it's crazy.
And yeah,
trying to listen to everything is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
singles are, I mean, I love albums. I know you do too, and appreciate it. And I always will. I do feel like there's something about more of a value in singles in this day and age.
Yeah,
depending on the kind of project you're doing, I guess. But for like a song based, lyrical kind of thing, I don't know.
Would you consider doing that instead of like another album next or like
or like maybe there's no rules, maybe I would like to like I think if I could do it totally my way, I'd love to like drop a single as I write them and release it just digital and then
collect them
and then exactly put it together when it works for an album and then do that, but I'm admittedly not the greatest businessman, so but it would just I feel like it makes sense artistically in this day and age that you can just say like, man, we just practiced. Here you go, you know? But
I mean, people, I think now with people who buy music, if you're going to buy vinyl or even a CD, it's like something you're fairly invested in already because you're able to sample everything in mm-hmm. advance. Anyway, so if you're releasing something like a song a month or however long in between, and people are really into it, then they're going to be excited to like
mm-hmm.
have the artifact of it later on, even if they never spin the record and they just listen to it on Spotify or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? It's just... people, if they buy it, they're really invested in it. Mm-hmm. So
for sure.
I think that would be cool. So you mentioned like you're on basically Love Language 9.0 or something right now. And so part of like, I know like a lot of the narrative around your new album and everything is talking about you moving from, you were in Roanoke, Virginia most recently.
There was like a long pit stop there between North Carolina. But yeah, I was there for about 5-6 months.
But definitely you're somebody I'd say who is strongly associated with North Carolina and like the scene there, even though when people think of the North Carolina like rock scene, most people go back to Superchunk and like those bands in the 90s and you kind of came out of a time where I don't know if what a lot of things have kind of branched off from, you know, your original scene and in Raleigh, and some bands have like really blown up in some ways and different things, but I don't know if there's anything that would define that time exactly. Yeah. And now a lot of the narrative is about how you crossed the country and you're now in LA. Most of the album was written before the move, though. Is that true?
Yeah, pretty much 90%.
Okay.
There was just kind of like, you know, it was a long time between records, so I was always sort of like, you know, I was always like writing and demoing stuff. I never like totally took a break from, you know, trying to create and stuff, but so I kind of like had these different piles of songs that I was like, okay, this is gonna be my like folk country record, or this is this kind of like noisy rock thing I'm trying, this one's gonna be, I had all these weird little baskets. I was like, I was trying to make a cohesive, like a bunch of cohesive albums, And then I just sort of realized, like, you know, maybe it's getting back to what we talked about earlier, like singles or something. I was just like, I need to just start thinking about my favorite songs, like, one at a time. And then I kind of pulled those and that, and I finally, like, you know, pulled the ones I felt would work as different as they were, but together on a record, and put it together. But yeah, a lot of it was written, like, it's tough to say, like, it was like all over the place. I'd say maybe like half was written in Raleigh, like, in like Chapel Hill, like years before I kind of like really kicked it in high gear to like get the record done. Mm-hmm. And that happened when I moved to Roanoke. So while I was in Roanoke, I built like a kind of like a makeshift studio with my brother, and we both kind of shared it, and I was just in there like every day for, you know, for like months, just kind of like chipping away at everything. And then I, like, my goal was like, I'm gonna finish a record and then I'm gonna move to LA. I didn't quite finish the record
okay.
in time, yeah. And I didn't quite finish the record in time, but I think I was in LA for like a month, and just all those like pieces came mm-hmm. together and finished. So, and to explain it, it's like the way I write is I write and record. So I did a lot of the production myself on the final album with the assistance of Chris Hilbert, who engineered and like mixed it with me. But so I just say, like, I basically like got the demos finished, written, then went to the studio to finish it. I feel like this is such a boring way to tell every time, but that's just the process.
It's the process, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it worked really well for me. Now I feel like I finally got it kind of figured out.
This album doesn't really have anything to do with LA, really. Like, you mm-hmm. pretty much finished with the record by the time you moved out here. So do you know,
yeah.
like, this, what you've been working on since you've moved, or, like, other songs you've been writing? Have you found that it's affected your music at all?
Yeah, for sure. And, it wasn't really an LA album, but there are references to it. Some of the lyrics about LA were written, like I said, back in college. It was weird. It was like, I was like trying to tell myself something, like, I don't know, from internally or something. But yeah, a lot of that, I think I had just been always kind of like, I dreamed of like moving out here, and it became a reality, and it's been awesome. But yeah, as far as the new stuff, like, I honestly, I did kind of this weird post-punk project. I did like maybe... I recorded like 4 songs for. I'll say, I might take it down, but it's like Honey LA Bandcamp. I have to get a new band name, but it's up. It exists, but they're kind of rough demos. But it's me trying like a total different thing. So I guess when you think of LA, you know, the typical thoughts are like, I don't know, like Laurel Canyon or something. But yeah. I guess I was like pulling from some of the punk history here too. There's, you know, there's so much musical history, but like, so I did that. I've also like mixed 2 records for some friends. That's taken up a lot of time, but
oh, cool.
Literally last night I finished mixing one. It's for my friend Andy Holmes. He's putting it out under that name. I don't know the exact date yet, but great stuff. Anyways, I've been busy, and literally I am like going to Guitar Center after this interview to get a little bit of equipment for the home studio, and I'm about to get into a serious writing session. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a little too early to say what I have, but mm-hmm. I'm itching to write, and I'm just, yeah, clearing out my schedule, so I'm going to just be a weirdo in the bedroom for, like, the next month.
And see, kind of...
I've warned Megan. I'm going to get into that crazy mode. She's like, you do it, baby.
It'll be, you know, are you ready to make like your LA record where it's just yeah. like palm trees and beach life and everything's content and
yeah, I don't know what it's all gonna be. Musically
medicinal smell in the air probably yeah. or something.
Yeah. It definitely does influence like breezier chord progressions or something, but yeah.
Yeah. And also like you're out here but your band isn't. So what is that dynamic like getting together for shows and everything?
Yeah, well the band's like they're they all have other stuff going on, and it's like, you know, I mean, I don't think, I always feel weird saying that, but I think it's pretty obvious that, like, the Love Language is me, and that's not to belittle what they all bring to the project, but I think they all know, like, you know, just how it goes. I will say Tom, the drummer, he played a lot on the record, and we've been playing music together for years, so I do feel a loyalty to him for sure. But but you know, it's, I can get some cheap plane tickets out here, and we make it work. I do hope to get on the, like, do a little solo shows out here as well. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoy doing that, like playing it real stripped down. So trying to work on that as well.
And this show at the Bootleg in a few weeks is the first like full band show since Baby Grand's come out in LA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. Like, it'll be like your second home
kind of
show.
Yeah, we did a few shows since we've been in LA, kind of random. We did New Year's Eve at the Ace Hotel Palm Springs. That was so random, but I put a band.
Oh, with Waves, right?
Yeah, yeah, I put a band together, and Megan, my girlfriend, played keys, and she's playing keys at the LA show too.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I, you know, got Andrew and friends Paul, and got them to fill out bass and drums. And those shows were great. I guess it's so, I don't know, it's tricky to say. It's always going to be kind of a revolving cast. But my first chair, Love Language, is definitely like the North Carolina.
Oh, that's I like thinking about it that way.
Yeah.
The first chair.
But I don't think they definitely don't get offended if I do it. They're just like, they know they're good.
And they're down for,
I got to keep it moving too.
For the tours when they can happen. I mean, it's hard to like, everybody's got lives, you know, it's hard to jump into things sometimes.
Basically like, the whole thing with music in 2019, you just make it happen how you can.
Yeah,
you know,
it, nobody ever said it was.
There's a lot of obstacles.
A great profession.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's
nobody
everything.
Sure.
No, that's true. But it is the most. You know, it's one of the most beautiful things you can do.
But yeah.
So, and speaking of like other music, has there been anything lately you've been really into, or like what have you been listening to?
Yeah. I've been like on this sort of continuous search for like weird pop songs, that obscure pop songs, but they're great. I'm always like, and I mean, I hate to admit it, but Spotify Discover Weekly is kind of awesome. Do you ever?
Their algorithms are pretty good. They're pretty good now.
And so I kind of like go through, but I don't know. I guess there's a part of me that I want to be like some musical like archaeologist and find rare shit. So it's been mostly kind of old stuff. This song, Seabird, I've been obsessed with. Is it Elise? I'm making sure I say this right. I'm like looking at my phone just to.
So you really.
It's Elise Brothers, I think.
Elise Brothers.
Have you heard this?
I feel like I've seen that name before.
I'm obsessed with the song Seabird.
And so you really are consuming music a lot, like in song based and playlists.
Elise Brothers.
This looks like straight out of the what, 70s,
so,
early 80s.
It's so good. Yeah. What else? I finally came around to the Urinals. You ever listen to them? They were an LA punk band from the, I think they were like early, like late 70s.
Okay.
But dug some of that stuff. So much random shit. I finally learned about DJ PayPal. I'm like all over the place. Yeah, I'm totally all over the place.
I see a lot of Kanye in there.
I try to, like, all this, like, crazy Kanye stuff going on, which is...
I just read the album's not coming out for another couple months because he's got to go to Africa to complete it.
Yeah.
So, and maybe you should try that on the next album.
Yeah.
Just like,
or my roots go to Scotland.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, touch the soil.
We're people are up, you know, the McClams and the McClam Rocks are somewhere over there.
Oh,
touch the soil. That you won't be able to put the finishing touches on the next record until you go there.
Oh.
I don't think.
I would love to do that, actually.
You guys should play over there. You know,
I need to hit up Merge. Hey, I need to rent out a castle in Scotland for the next record.
You add the A back to the name, so it's MacLam.
Yeah.
And then just...
I mean, we should talk about how similar our names are, too.
Yeah, so Mac... I mean, I think there's some part of the clan that went rogue
at some
point.
Started rocking a little harder.
Either they started rocking or they stopped rocking. One of the two. And they maybe got the animals confused, the marine life and the, you know, you would think there would be more lambs going on than clams in Scottish cuisine, but
yeah,
well, there's a lot of sheep, right? So there's got to be a lot of lambs around.
Sure, that
is that logical?
I think people were drinking a lot and just forgetting bees and M's and mixing stuff up too.
Yeah, some uncle was a mariner and some uncle ran like the sheep farm and they just decided to change the names from there. Dude, yeah, well, it was really good. It was really good having you in on the show. Everybody should check out Baby Grand immediately. Get it up on your streaming services and buy the record. People in L.A., got to come out to the show.
And, yeah, Friday, October 19th. Bootleg Theater.
I love that place.
With, oh yeah, we already hit the shout out. Bootleg Theater with Dante Elefante and Jack Tate and the Satisfactions.
Sweet. And another West Coast tour coming up next.
Soon.
So hold your horses, everybody there. All right, Sue.
All right, thanks for having me.
Music,
I love that we both have this little thing. You stole your whole brand.